to the Extra Magic Hour, a Disney Parks podcast. Here are your hosts, Anne Ravanos and Dimitri Ravanos.
Welcome to another edition of the Extra Magic Hour. After we took a couple of weeks off, I'm Dimitri.
And I'm Kat.
All right, so, an update. Again, she will be back with us soon, I promise. In the process of a move, some stuff got screwed up, and she is a little bit behind on getting an internet-accessible place. So she is coming back. We have not gotten rid of her, but in the meantime, Kat and I are flying solo on the show. And before we jump in, I want to tell you that I am right at the end of a cold, so if you hear me sniff loudly into the microphone, that is why, and I apologize. But, Kat, how are you?
I'm doing very good.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. So you and I were talking about your trip to Chicago to go see Hamilton.
Yes.
I guess not on Broadway. Go to Chicago to see Hamilton off Broadway.
Yes. Yeah, it's like Broadway in Chicago or something like that.
Right, yeah. Chicago is more known for non-musicals, right? Like, their theater scene is way more about just staged plays.
I actually have no idea, because this is only the second time I've been to Chicago, and the first time was all about being an American Girl, so.
Wait, you mean the American Girl doll collection?
Yeah. I went there. That was like what the trip was based on when I went last time. And then this time it was focused on more of the touristy things, plus going to see Hamilton.
Well, sure. Well, all right. Well, that's very good. So you and I were talking about not only the way that Hamilton as a pop culture entity blew up, but we were talking about Lin-Manuel Miranda and the various opportunities he has gotten as a result of Hamilton. But before Hamilton came along, didn't he already do some stuff with Disney?
Yes, he did. He did the, what's it called? Not Cabana. The music in Star Wars for Cantina.
That's right. Yeah. He did the new Cantina music for Episode 7. And then he is the entire musical force behind Moana, right?
Yes, I think. I'm pretty sure it's entire, but I know it says features songs.
Well, that is it's interesting just from the standpoint of I would not think a guy with as much, needing as much creative freedom as is necessary to create something like Hamilton would be interested in working with someone like Disney, who, you know, all their music, I'm not saying it's the same, but all of it has to fit into a certain, what's the right way to say it? Like, it has to fit into a certain box with their movie music.
Right. It kind of has to be able to become a classic, like Alan Menken and Howard Ashman.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, and that's a perfect way of bringing it up, is that Alan Menken and Howard Ashman, I mean, they became such the gold standard in the 90s that it was Howard Ashman that died, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that Alan Menken for years basically got to hand select the composer he wanted to work with, and then even after that, and I'm going to have to go back and double check this, but I'm positive this is the case. I think he got to select, even when he was not working on a movie, he got to select who did work on a movie for Disney.
I kind of wonder that, because so he didn't do the music for Lion King, but Tim Rice, who worked with Alan Menken on Aladdin after Howard Ashman died,
right,
did the music for Lion King, because Alan was working on Pocahontas at the same time. So that would kind of make sense if he did get to do that.
Right, and it may have weaved itself in the way that Tim Rice also then goes on. After he and Elton John had all this success with The Lion King, they created Disney's first foray into Broadway musicals. Aida, was that what it was called?
Right, yes.
Yeah, so they created that. So maybe that's what it is. Maybe now Tim Rice sort of has that same pull, and he is able to convince some of the guys that come from Broadway to give this a shot. The way they brought in, what's the name of the married couple that did Frozen?
Robert and Kristen Lopez.
Lopez, yeah. So I wonder if that's the connection there.
You know, I kind of also wonder if the reason they brought in Lin-Manuel Miranda. So I know you said you haven't listened to the soundtrack of Hamilton, but Hamilton has so many different types of songs. Like, yeah, there's rap and hip hop, but then there's very Broadway music. And then there's like this one acoustic song like that. I almost feel like you could hear it on the radio possibly.
Uh-huh.
So I think maybe he is going to be kind of like how Phil Collins was for Tarzan, like all like. The songs are pop, but they're also musical-esque.
You know, and you're a lot younger than me, as we've talked about before when we record this show, but there was a time, like, I remember Beauty and the Beast. I remember it being number one on Casey's Top 40. I remember,
Which version?
World?
The Celine Dion and Peebo Bryson?
Yeah. And then the Peebo Bryson and, who did Whole New World? Peebo Bryson and...
I actually don't know.
Oh, man. There was a period of time in the early 90s, Peebo Bryson only got work singing right. the title songs from Disney songs. But yeah, that whole Beauty and the Beast, A Whole New World, Elton John re-recording songs from the Lion King soundtrack, the entire point of that was to get radio play. So it's not like they haven't done this stuff before. And I think they were kind of caught off guard with how much people were into the Idina Menzel version of Let It Go. Because, you know, there's a Demi Lovato version.
Right.
On the soundtrack.
It's not good.
I don't think it's terrible, but it's certainly not. Like, the Idina Menzel version is iconic, right?
Right.
No matter what you think about her, that is the iconic track from the movie. And, yeah, I mean, and the Demi Lovato version also... sounds very much like it's being played up to be put on pop radio.
Right.
All right.
Which it was, but that's okay.
All right, well, let's jump into news for this week.
Okay, so we're going to talk about the number one news story that happened last week, Hurricane Matthew, where it actually caused Disney World to shut its doors down for only the fourth time because of a hurricane. So it started out with an announcement. I think it was on Thursday. It was either Thursday morning or Wednesday night that they were canceling the Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween party for Thursday. And then as the day progressed, they actually announced that they were going to close Walt Disney World on Friday. And there is not a panic, that's not the right word, but there was kind of a press for all the people who were at like the value resorts to go and get food if possible from like the food court so that they, because they might not be able to leave their resort room on Friday because of the hurricane.
Wow.
And everything was fine. The hurricane actually didn't hit them as they expected. It was still like heavy winds, heavy rain, but by the afternoon, I think it was like 5 p.m. in the afternoon, I know people were swimming at the Polynesian.
Well, so I have my college roommate lives in Tampa, which, you know, I mean, if you have traveled down there, you know, Tampa is only like an hour away from Orlando.
Right.
And he said it was nothing in Tampa like it was in Orlando, that it was they got heavy rain, but that's about all they got. And once by the time it got up here to the Carolinas, it had slowed down as such and also it had lost some power. But it had slowed down in such a way that we probably got as much rain as Florida got. It just got extended over 3 days.
Right.
Because the storm just started slowing down by the time it got over Georgia. A couple of things we learned. Like, if you ever doubted that that old urban legend that the Cinderella's castle can break apart in the event of a hurricane, now you know, no, it cannot. Right?
Definitely not.
Yeah. The other thing is, it obviously takes some sort of extraordinary projection before Disney will close the park, even during a hurricane or tropical storm. I was trying to remember before we started recording what storm it was I was down there for in 2006, and it was Hurricane Ernesto was the storm, which by the time it made landfall in Florida, I think was a Category 1, if not even just a tropical storm by that point. But Anne had just started working down there. My wife and I had gone to visit her I think we were staying at, one of the All-Stars or Pop Century, I can't remember which. But we went into the park that day. It was almost completely empty. The hotels did a great job at taking care of people, but so few people actually went into the park that it was just one of those days where it's like, all right, I just finished a ride on Space Mountain. Is it okay if I sit right here and go on the ride again? You know, I mean, it was that kind of empty. But, you know, that's it's very rare that they will actually shut it down.
Right. And like I said, it was only the fourth time because of a hurricane in its 45 years of operation. And as far as I know, and what I've read, most people were very, very impressed at the cast members and how they took care of all their guests. And, like, I mean, there were dance parties for kids. Apparently, characters came to the resorts, for a character. So, like, Pluto and Goofy, I know, were at Caribbean Beach Resort, which is really cool. And so it's not like they were just like, okay, you got to stay in your room all day. They were like, here's what we can do, and here's what you can do. And then, you know, by the end of Friday afternoon, they were like, okay, the parks were still closed, but you can go swimming and you can explore. So,
well, and so I'm guessing by the end of Friday, I'm guessing Disney Springs stayed closed that entire time.
No, I think Disney Springs actually opened for resort guests only. So okay. Only if you were staying. I don't know what time. I just remember reading it somewhere. But so people were able to go to Disney Springs.
Yeah, well, I remember being down there on the TVs that day. They were playing like very, very new movies. Because they knew people were stuck in their rooms. But, yeah, I mean, look, it's in the middle of Florida. For years, I'm sure, they have gone through training at a corporate level of what to do when there's a storm that is going to keep people paying multiple thousands of dollars in some cases from actually getting to enjoy the vacation that they had planned for.
Yeah, and I know they offered refunds for the Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween parties, it was a refund, or you could switch to a different day or something. Uh-huh. I'm not 100% sure. And then I know Friday, actually, I think it was all weekend, from Thursday until like Sunday or something, the Disney phone lines were backed up with calls. Like, people couldn't get through because so many people were like canceling their trip and wanting refunds and whatever else was going on.
Yeah, I mean, right before it hit land, you know, it was still a Category 4, Category 5 storm.
Right.
And I think the reference that a lot of people that live in hurricane-prone areas remember is, think about the damage that Katrina did in New Orleans. That was a Category 3 storm. So, I mean, it makes sense to me that
right.
people were kind of freaking out about what would be there by the time they got down to Orlando.
Yeah.
All right, what else do we have in the news?
So it was a big week for the Muppets last week. So they started the Great Moments in American History with the Muppets, which if you haven't seen a video of it, you should go watch it because it's hilarious. But then also the Muppet Mobile Lab, it returned to Epcot as well. And if you don't know what the Muppet Mobile Lab was, I wasn't 100% sure, so I had to look it up. It's two audio animatronic characters, which are Dr. Bunsen and Beaker, and it like rolls around on. It's described as a Segway type platform, and it you get to interact with the characters. Like, the guests get to interact with the characters, and it started in Epcot in 2007, but it hasn't been back since then because it traveled all over the world, like to California and Hong Kong, and at other like Imagineering conventions, I guess. So apparently, it's really funny. We'll look for it when I go next week, but I can't promise that I'm going to like actively like seek it out. But Beaker is like one of my favorite Muppet characters. Actually, let's be honest, they're all my favorite characters. But I think it could be funny.
Yeah, well, the cool thing too about the Muppet Mobile Lab is it is sort of the next generation of like Turtle Talk with Crush or Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor of their living character initiative. And they had a dinosaur character for a while that walked around Animal Kingdom. I've never gotten to see either the dinosaur or Muppet Mobile Labs. But yeah, it is very cool. I know they took it to Pixar a few years ago. And that's where it lived. Not coming out all the time. That's just where they stored it for the longest time. I'm glad to see it back out in the parks.
Yeah, I think those are like one of the funniest characters, just because, you know, they're scientists and everything always goes wrong with them.
Absolutely.
And so I think it'd be funny to see like what can go wrong on this little platform that they have.
As a bald man with a perfectly round head, there have been multiple Halloweens. I've just bought green paint and gone as Bunsen Honeydew.
Oh my gosh, that's awesome!
All right, what else is in the news?
So there is a new meet and greet at Disney Springs. It's where Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique used to be at the World of Disney. And now there are four different princesses that you can meet. Not all at the same time, but it will just be one of either Cinderella, Snow White, Aurora, or Tiana. And this is only going on through October from 10 to 4 daily. And a Disney Photo Pass photographer will be on hand. So if you have Memory Maker, you can get a picture with a princess at Disney Springs.
Yeah, I think they should be doing more of this character stuff at Disney Springs, because I feel like they did with the Fab Five. They would do this upon occasion. But as much of a focus as they are putting on Disney Springs, I think we sort of heard at the last D23 that 2017 was the year of Animal Kingdom and 2018 was the, you know, year of this or whatever, but 2016 was the year of Disney Springs. I think if they really are making this their highlight this year, the part of the park they want to feature, you do have to do this kind of stuff to bring people to Disney Springs at earlier times of day.
Yeah, I think this will be really, really cool. And like, I haven't told my girlfriends about it because I just found this out last night, and I'm just like, another place to meet a character, like, oh my gosh, because we're planning on going to Disney Springs at least one day.
Yeah.
And so I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, I think it makes all the sense in the world, and given the overhaul that the World of Disney has had, I think putting a permanent character display in there, whether it's the kind of thing where you have multiple sets you can change out, or a set that is in place for, you know, 2 months at a time, and then you change out for the next character. I just think it makes a ton of sense to use some of that room in the World of Disney to do more than just retail.
Right. And I mean, like you said, it's huge. And like, I love walking in the World of Disney and like looking, and I think I've only spent like an hour in there looking at everything, but I could totally spend a lot more time if there are characters there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so that's it for news today, right?
I have a rumor.
Oh, we do. Okay, very good.
The rumor is that it is almost ready for Rivers of Light to be rolling out, and there's like a different type of soft opening that's happening. So cast members have already seen the show. Well, a lot of cast members have already seen the show Rivers of Light.
Uh-huh.
And this soft opening isn't going to be like other soft openings. There's not going to be an announcement. But it's kind of like if you walk onto the set or like where the seats are, then you can watch it. It doesn't really give other details other than that. It just says, no dates were discussed. This will not be like other soft openings. There's no announcements. So like asking a cast member is not going to help. There's not going to be meal deals or packages.
Huh.
And the show will just start after a brief announcement, like in Animal Kingdom. So if you're walking around and they make an announcement, and then you just walk to it and take a seat, and it's first come, first served. So it's saying just pay attention and hopefully you'll be there when they throw a show.
Interesting. So, but there's no date given for that yet.
Nope, no date.
You know, one of the things I heard as the delay got further and further was that some of the park officials believed they had a very beautiful show with Rivers of Light, but they had a boring show. That it was great to look at, but in terms of story and engagement, it's just not what Fantasmic is, let's say. So I wonder if they felt like maybe there was no fixing that, or they think they fixed it. They just want to get some confirmation from guests walking out before they invest time and money into advertising. It's a very weird way for Disney to roll out a show.
I know. And like I said, this is just a rumor, so maybe like part of it isn't true, but This is from just a Diz board's discussion, so I don't know how reliable the source is, but
Sure.
I think it's worth a try if you're down at Disney World. I think it's worth a try if you're at Animal Kingdom at night, kind of. And I'm not 100% sure where this show, like where the seating is. So if you find out like where the seating will be, just kind of like hang around there, maybe like 7, 8 o'clock. And see
All
what's
right.
going on. Yeah.
Well, very good. And you know what? Even if you cannot get to the seating, try hanging out by the open seating area at Flame Tree Barbecue, because there is a way to see into the into that arena from there. So just keep
Yes.
that in mind.
Yes.
All right. Well, very good. So we've got an interesting feature for you this week. It is, when I say heavy, I don't mean like you're going to be in tears. It's just a how would you describe it, Kat? Like thought-provoking, maybe is the right way to say it.
Yeah, I think yes, I think so. And we're not going to talk politics, but there will be some political stuff in it, if that makes sense.
Yes, here's the difference between I'm going to say us, but I mean me specifically. Kat, if you don't feel this way and want to distance yourself, that is fine. But this is the difference between the show that Anne and I had in mind and what Two Men and a Mouse had in mind. I don't mind talking politics. I don't mind talking politics and societal issues, and I don't mind if we disagree. My goal is not to I'm not trying to make you uncomfortable with what we're going to talk about. I think there are some things about Disney that are fun to talk about in an adult way. And that is kind of what we're going to get into next. So stick around. Thanks for hanging out inside the Extra Magic Tower.
Hey, WDPN listeners. This is Allie Eibler from the Geek Watchtower. And as you know, we live in the golden age of geek culture. With all the movies, television shows, comic books, video games encompassing the world of geekdom, it can be a real chore to keep up with all of it. Well, here on the White Dragon Podcast Network, we have a little something called the Geek Watchtower. Kevin Kessler, Chris Doherty, and I run down the latest geek news items every Friday morning for you, before we focus on a fandom feature topic of the week. We're talking about everything from Batman to the Avengers, anime, Doctor Who, Disney, Nintendo, and so much more. So make sure you join Kevin, Chris, and I every Friday morning in the Geek Watchtower, where we monitor all the things that geeks watch. Find it on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and of course at WhiteDragonPodcastNetwork.com.
Hey folks, Kevin Kessler from the White Dragon Podcast Network here. One of the questions I get asked all the time is, Kevin, I want to have a podcast, but I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know anything about audio equipment. I don't know anything about editing. I don't know anything about how to post and promote a podcast. Well, folks, you are in luck, because what if I told you there is a way you can have your podcast with minimal effort from you and still be a part of the White Dragon Podcast Network, joining the family of 9 all-star podcasts that are already broadcasting 7 days a week here on WDPN. For a free consultation, please send an email to kevin@whitedragonpodcastnetwork.com, and I will tell you personally how we can take care of everything from the production to the editing to the posting to the server space to promotion of your podcast. I want to welcome you into the White Dragon Podcast Network family, so please drop me a line, kevin@whitedragonpodcastnetwork.com. I look forward to welcoming you into the White Dragon Podcast Network.
Today's feature segment, we're calling it Moral Obligations, and I thought about this while watching the presidential debate on Sunday. And I have talked about this on the show before. I am probably a little more liberal than the average Disney, I guess, super fan would be, let's say. And so I'm watching the debates and thinking, knowing that the Hall of Presidents is about to have to make this decision about what they're doing with the new president, knowing that in the past, Imagineers have talked kind of off the record about not liking adding new presidents to the Hall of President because we are in such a politicized time. If a guy like Donald Trump wins, how on earth do you put him in the Hall of Presidents? I know you have to, right? I know you have
right.
to. But I don't know how you could have a Hall of Presidents show that would not be interrupted by people screaming at robots. I mean, I know that sounds silly, but that is the case, right?
Right. And you know he's going to have a monologue.
Exactly. Right. Because that's who gets to speak now, right? You have Washington, Lincoln, and the newest president. Is that right. Are there more? Or that's it, right?
I think that's it. I'm pretty sure that's it. I've only done the last time I did the Hall of Presidents was last year, and before then, I don't remember ever doing the Hall of Presidents.
Yeah, it's one of those that every now and then I try and tell myself, oh, it's not nearly as bad as people say it is, and then you go and sit in and you're like, oh, yeah, no, it is. It's terrible.
I know. With this debate, or not this debate, with this election, I'm kind of like, do I want to go see it one more time before they put in the new president?
That's a very good question. And so this is what we'll do for moral obligations. We each came up with three questions for one another, and we'll debate back and forth, and in some cases we'll probably agree fully of what should Disney do, or what is Disney's moral obligation in this scenario, all right? So I'll get it started, because my first one is, what should Disney do with the Hall of Presidents if Donald Trump wins?
So, I don't know. This is like the worst question to ask me, because what came out last week, it just made me so angry. Like, I don't think I would ever want to step into the Hall of Presidents while he's the one who gets to do the monologue.
Sure.
Just because, obviously, Disney is going to do it. And actually, so they are, because of the election, it's happening in November, and then the new president will be sworn in January.
Uh-huh.
There is a six-month refurbishment happening in the Hall of Presidents, and it's from January 17th through June 29th. And this is one of the longest times that they've ever closed the Hall of Presidents for an addition to it. And so part of me kind of wonders, well, yeah, they're going to be working on the animatronic, but are they also going to, like, be really detailing how to put the president's monologue?
Yeah, and that has always been the case, right? The sitting president, a piece of his inauguration speech, is part of the monologue that sitting president will stand up and deliver. I'm conflicted by this, because on the one hand, I don't see how, I just don't see how we got to this point that someone like Donald Trump is a serious nominee for president, giving all of the horrible things we know about him, right? Now, I will say that I understand that there are people on the flip side that would say the same thing about Hillary Clinton.
Right.
You're wrong, but whatever. but, you know, we are, ever since 2000, cast members have talked about people standing up and saying horrible things while the sitting president is speaking. Whether it was George W. Bush or Barack Obama, and then now whoever it will be next, right? And I mean, you can imagine what those things are. I don't know that Disney has, despite the way Walt felt about history, about Abraham Lincoln in general, Walt's dead. This is a company now. I don't know that Disney has any obligation to keep this attraction open.
True.
Because here's the thing, especially if Donald Trump wins, this is a new level of, boy, do we want this guy in the Hall of Presidents. That being said, let's not pretend like there were not slave owners already in the Hall of Presidents, right?
Right, right. And there were.
Exactly.
So, I don't know. It's just like one of those classic attractions. And there will probably be more progressive people who become president, but maybe we should just stop it at Barack Obama.
I mean, look, there are, I have a friend that was a cast member for a while that was, she did not regularly work the Hall of Presidents, but was covering a shift there one rather busy day for the Hall of Presidents, and said that on multiple showings, people had to be escorted out of the Hall of Presidents. Multiple showings in a single day. So I don't know. This is sort of like the argument when Epcot was, or when Israel was trying to invest in opening a pavilion at Epcot. At the end of the day, do you have any obligation to put something in that would alienate more guests than it would attract?
Probably not. No, you're right. There is no obligation. It's a company. Like, they don't have to.
Right. So, to me, the moral obligation, if you had to say one way or the other, what should Disney do? honestly, I lean more towards close it. I mean, like, we've already gotten to this point in, and this is not Disney, we've already gotten to this point with society where we don't respect the other side's point of view, where we have people in a theme park, which, you know, granted, is geared to the whole family, but is built on an empire of entertaining children, where people stand up and yell at inanimate objects because they don't like what it represents.
It just kind of still blows my mind that people are yelling at fake people.
Well, look.
Like, not a real being.
Robot George W. Bush bears just as much, much responsibility for the war in Iraq in some people's mind.
Apparently.
All right, what's your first one?
My first one is, so did you see, like, all the controversy over the Maui costume that had the, darkened skin and the tattoos on it?
I did.
Okay, so my first moral obligation is, so obviously there's gonna have to be a Moana face character. Like, they're anticipating this movie to be really big. And so if there's a Moana face character, there might be a Maui face character too. So what is their moral obligation to how to do the tattoos for the Maui face character?
Well, I think that there's almost no way because, you know, I think anybody that has seen, whether it's the preview or just the concept art, like, Maui does not look like a human being from the standpoint of he's just a giant. I mean, there's no way you're going to find someone with that kind of dimensions, let alone enough people to do an in-park character for them. So there's just no way to reasonably think they could do it without creating a synthetic costume of some sort.
Right.
That being said, I know that in recent years they have made more of an effort to bring in more North African and Middle Eastern girls to play Jasmine, not just well-tanned women. So I would guess that would have to be a part of it, right? Like, if you get to this point where you cannot not have Maui in the parks, you have to then go out of your way to find Samoan guys to play the character.
Right. But I was also thinking they could do make Maui like kind of like a fur character, kind of like what they did with Russell and Carl Fredrickson from Up.
Yeah. That's it. I mean, like, that would make a lot more sense, especially when you add in what I said about he just doesn't look human.
Right.
Right.
So, like, then you can have a bigger character, or it's just a bigger or a thicker costume, I guess, with the tattoos on it, and it wouldn't be so, I guess, insulting. It's not like you're putting on a costume with dark skin.
Right. I'm trying to think about then what are the implications if you are not doing this as a human character, if the representation of Maui is this walking cartoon, basically.
Right.
You know, I don't know, like, the difference between the costume that was in the Disney store and what you're suggesting would be that the costume that was in the Disney store was clearly meant for, was clearly meant as, I don't want to say as a joke, but, like, part of the silliness of, oh, look, there's a child with all the rippling muscles of Maui, and that wouldn't be the case with a full costumed character. So maybe you could get away with it in that way. It's going to be, I mean, I don't know. I wonder if they maybe set themselves up to where there's no way they could bring Maui into the park.
With the costume thing, I think that I wouldn't be surprised if Maui didn't even make it. But the only reason I think he could be is because he is one of the main characters he is the second main character in the movie. So.
Yeah, that's the thing too, right? Like the difference with Maui in Moana and Olaf, who ended up becoming, I think, the second biggest star of Frozen, is there aren't four different layers that you have to get through before you've exhausted all other options.
Right.
Right. Like, I mean, there was Elsa and Anna and Kristoff. You know, before you finally got to, okay, now we have to do an Olaf in the park. And also, Olaf, there's nothing culturally representative with Olaf. He's just he's a magic snowman.
Yes.
That's a weird one. I don't know what the obligation would be. I think you probably are right that if you're going to do it, you have to do it the way they did Russell and Carl Fredrickson and make it a full-on character, not a face character.
Right.
All right.
Or like any of the villains too.
Yeah,
or most villains.
That's true. All right, my next one for you is, all right, this one is a little less morally and more like what corporate responsibility would be. Does Disney have any obligation to create purely unique stores and restaurants instead of turning something like Disney Springs into an outlet mall?
So is this just specifically for Disney Springs?
Yeah, because, you know, there are, you know, I think we've all seen the things with Disney Springs of what moved in when they opened the town center, right? It's all stuff that you can see at any mall. But given the nature of what it costs to move into Disney Springs, what it costs to operate Disney Springs, it is like you can go look at MAC Cosmetics and buy something from there, but it's three times as much as you would pay for it anywhere else. If Disney is asking people to come and be a part of this shopping experience, do they at least not have an obligation to create a shopping experience you cannot get elsewhere?
Honestly, until recently, probably like my senior year of high school, maybe, we didn't really do Disney Springs because I always saw it as just a shopping, like a regular shopping center. Now, that's when I didn't understand that, like, there was stuff there that you couldn't really do anywhere else. But, like, I mean, they've always had, or for as long as I remember, they've always had Cirque du Soleil, which you can do other places. They had Planet Hollywood, which I know isn't there anymore, but, like, you can do Planet Hollywood other places. So I kind of just always saw it as kind of like a generic thing with a few Disney stores here and there. So I don't know. Like, I don't think they necessarily have to keep it in the Disney theme, to me.
Okay. All right, I mean, you and I kind of different on that one, but obviously this is not one that's major, a major social issue. I think that if you are asking people to go and pay $45, $50 for a t-shirt, it better be something you can only get, if not in that specific place, at least on Disney property somewhere. And I know that they've done a really good job of incorporating some of the new businesses they brought in of doing this stuff is only available at the Disney Springs location. And maybe it's part of the fan in me, the parks fan in me too, that I kind of have a problem with, like I said earlier, this is supposed to be the year of Disney Springs. And I mean, what we got was a shopping mall.
Yeah. I mean, I can see your viewpoint, but like I said, like it's just, and I do enjoy going to Disney Springs. Like we're going to go there one day, next, or for our trip. But it to me, it's just always been kind of, just shop around. I don't necessarily buy anything.
Sure. Know? Sure. Yeah, I understand that. I think the only store that I know for a fact I go in knowing I'm going to spend money, if not a decent amount of money, is the Days of Christmas store at Disney Springs, because I'm a bit of a Christmas fanatic.
Most of the time I'll buy something at World of Disney just because I've been like shopping around all week, and then if I see it at the World of Disney, then I'll be like, okay, I'll just get it here.
Right. I apologize for all the sniffling on the other end of this thing. I am really trying not to have snot run down my nose the whole time we're talking. All right, what is your next one?
Okay, so my next one, it kind of goes back to the Moana thing, but okay. It's something that I've noticed on Tumblr a lot, and it's whitewashing face characters, and you kind of talked about how they're now kind of more bringing in girls who are and guys who are the proper ethnicity, but there is, even earlier this year, there was this huge explosion on Tumblr about like how even Elena of Avalor, like she needs to be Hispanic. Like if you don't get a Latina or a Latina girl playing Elena, then like there's like gonna be this riot on Tumblr, of course, not in real life.
Right, the digital riot.
And so it really got me thinking, like I've gone back and looked at pictures, and you were right, like they did, and they still do sometimes whitewash some of their characters. So what is their moral obligation? Like, what should they do to make sure that doesn't happen, I guess?
Well, I think, like, Elena is a perfect jumping off point here, because, you know, part of the reason Elena was created was in response to the perceived whitewashing of Sophia. When Sophia I was first being promoted, she was going to be Disney's first Latina princess, and what we got did not look very Latina. That's for sure. So if you are advertising the diversity of a character and then bring that character into the park, and suddenly, you know, Jasmine looks like a girl that goes tanning at a Long Island salon, that's a problem. That's a big problem.
Right.
Yeah, I think if you are going to, if especially, you got to think about the economic factors that go into Disney's diversity as well. If you're going to create characters to make money off of the population of Asian girls that never saw themselves represented in the princess family until Mulan came along, you better make sure your Mulan character, your Mulan walk-around character, is Asian. At the very least, if not absolutely Chinese.
Right.
No, I think Disney has a real obligation. If you're going to represent these cultures to make money, you better represent them to the very best of your ability in the park.
Yes, I agree, too. And it's especially characters like Mulan, and I mean they can't choose anybody except an African-American girl to play Tiana, but like Jasmine and Aladdin, they can sort of be borderline, and I know a lot of people who have gotten upset because Jasmine was clearly her tan was clearly fake, not an enhanced
right
skin girl, and so I think I have seen them doing better. But I think it still does need to be, it still needs to be corrected.
Yeah, my mom is much better at this than either Anne or I are. My mom can pick out a Greek person from a mile away.
Oh, that's awesome.
and has never, like, confronted a face character before, because obviously they can't play back. But when she takes the kids up to meet Alan and Jasmine, she will always make some sort of comment to my aunt in Greek that clearly that boy is from Greece. You know, clearly that Aladdin is from Greece. I think that Aladdin and Jasmine obviously have always represented this really tough spot for Disney because they were created as Middle Eastern characters, but I mean, are they really Middle Eastern? I mean, go back and look at the movie and tell me Aladdin is not a white guy. You know what I mean? I mean, like, there's a very stark contrast between Aladdin and the people that work in the market.
Right.
I think that's a good question. I think you sort of saw them take the steps with the costumes, at least, earlier this year to try and correct some of the cartoonish aspects of some of these characters' costumes. All right, last one from me is kind of a tough one, and I want not only you, Kat, but you people listening to really think about what the answer is here.
Okay.
Does Disney, after Ringling Brothers released their elephants from captivity at their center in Florida, Animal Kingdom is the last big entity down there with captive elephants. Does Disney have an obligation to release their elephants to some sort of nature preserve now?
Okay. Now, part of my answer might be ignorance, because I did hear about the Ringley Brothers thing, and I know they were going to release their elephants. But I always feel like it's different in Disney World, just because Animal Kingdom is really dedicated to wildlife conservation. And so I know these elephants aren't being mistreated, and they have a lot of room to roam, I guess. They have a lot more room to walk around and to not necessarily be free, but you know, they're not being held.
Well, I mean, here's the biggest difference is obvious, and there is definitely an element of performance with any animal in any zoo space, but
right. The
elephants are not explicitly there to perform the way they are in the circus.
Right.
I think that's what you're getting at.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's a very valid point, 100%. If I were in charge of making this decision for Disney, though, I would really consider it just because of the way it looks now. The moral obligation for me, that I have only recently started to understand, probably in the last couple of years. To me, the moral obligation is Disney should release the gorillas. Like, keeping gorillas in captivity is the cruelest thing imaginable, because they recognize any kind of eye contact and smiling as signs of aggression. Like, could you imagine being a gorilla in a zoo and all day long people coming by and staring you in the face and smiling at you? How nerve-wracking that must be.
I did not know that.
I only learned that a couple of years ago. And that's completely changed the way I view gorillas in captivity.
And now that you told me this, like, that must be nerve-wracking. And it makes this experience that I've had at Animal Kingdom kind of make more sense, that we thought it was funny and cute, but maybe now. When we went to Animal Kingdom after I graduated college, there was this gorilla there, and he had, like, this tub. It looked like a water tub, but it was empty. And we were watching him, and then he just, like, dumped the straw that was out of the tub and, like, put it over his head and started walking away. So maybe he was, like, hiding from us, and, like, we thought it was cute and funny, and maybe he was just getting away from the people. So maybe that is something that they should look into.
And I'm not saying that Disney has to do that.
Right.
I'm saying that, to me, elephants now is about optics. There are animals that genuinely go through psychological torment being in that situation of people making eye contact and showing their teeth when they smile at them every single day.
Right.
If you have a moral obligation, I think you do, but a lot of people don't, and I'm not going to argue with you on that. I think if you do have a moral obligation to take care of your animals, that's where you should begin.
Yes. No, I agree. I can agree with that. I think it would be really hard for them to do that, or any zoo, honestly, but I do see your point.
Well, I mean, look at it. Yeah, you know, and you're right. It would take a long time. Look at how long it took even the new owners of the Ringling Brothers Circus to make the decision finally that that this is something we need to do. And, you know, it's not just about, oh, we've invested all this money in these animals. It's also about, you know, do we know for a fact that they are going to a better environment than they're currently in?
Right.
Yeah. All right, okay. What's your last one?
So my last one, it kind of, so the question is going to start out more for, like, Walt Disney Studios, the movies.
Okay.
But it will tie into the parks. So is Disney obligated to have an open gay character? So I'm not talking about something that you can look into, like Timon and Pumbaa, like how people years later are like, they're gay parents,
right,
even though they've never officially been outed. So is Disney obligated to have a gay character? And, you know, you kind of brought this up when we were talking before. Disney is so, like, they have a huge LGBTQ following. And they even, what is it, they sponsor Gay Day, or they have, like, a specific day at Disney?
I believe, and you know what, call me out on this on the Facebook page if I get this wrong, because I want to make sure we get this right. I believe it is Gay Pride Week in June is a national thing, and the celebrations in Central Florida are organized, and those groups organize a day to go to Disney. Disney just doesn't do anything to say, no, you can't come in. Disney unofficially acknowledges it without really acknowledging it.
Okay, that makes sense. So, is the company obligated to finally have a gay character? And it doesn't have to be the main character.
Right.
It can be like a sidekick or something, but do you think they should?
Do I think they should? Yeah. I mean, I think they should, just because it's becoming more and more normal. I mean, my daughter goes to school with a couple of kids who are from, same-sex parent households. And you know, it is odd to me trying to figure out, the first time my daughter brought this up, it's odd to me to try and relate this to a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, that this is not odd. This is part of the new normal now. And yeah. It may not be what our family looks like, but it doesn't mean there aren't tons of families out there that look like this.
Right.
I think that, you know, Disney, Pixar in particular, has done a really good job in the last few years of putting in peripheral gay characters. There is the lesbian couple with a baby in Finding Dory. That's, you know, it's very brief, but it's there. There is an implication that Oaken and his family is a gay family in Frozen. I think that anybody that has ever read a book heavy in metaphor probably picks out that, of course, the story of Elsa is the story of what it must be like to be LGBT youth, right?
Right.
All that being said, I don't know that Disney has an obligation to make a character gay, a main character gay. I think we're going to get there, for sure, and I think it's a good thing that we're going to get there. I think they absolutely have an obligation to officially acknowledge Gay Day at Disney World.
Okay. I think I can back you up on that. Also, I think with all those indications in the movies, like, it's just, I think they meant for people to speculate on it, but I wish they could come out and be like, yeah, that's what we did.
Yeah, of course. Like, well, and that is why I think that Disney, look, they're very aware of the various segments of their audience, right? Which is why I don't think they would ever acknowledge that Elsa is gay. But I think they kind of know we cannot give Elsa a boyfriend in Frozen Part 2.
Yes, I agree.
Right? I mean, I think that is... because I think they took a step with Frozen that they weren't even willing to with Brave, right? Like, the point of Brave was just that Merida was a fiercely independent person. I know that I had just started doing talk radio when that movie came out, and I cannot tell you how many people, when I was talking about that movie, would, well, of course she's gay, blah, blah, blah. I was like, no, she's not gay. She just doesn't necessarily need a man. Doesn't, you
well,
know,
and
her life is about more than just being married off is the point of that one. Whereas I think it's hard not to look at Elsa's story as a metaphor for the life of a young gay woman.
Right. And also the thing with Brave is, like, she was 15.
Right.
And they were trying to marry her off. So, like, you can have that argument. But with Elsa, I mean, she was, well, it was obviously a huge metaphor. But also, she was 21 and she didn't want to, like.
Wait, was she 21? I thought she was supposed to be 18.
No, Anna was 18.
Oh, okay.
Elsa was 21 because that's when they crowned her. Or, like, I guess that was the rule in Arendelle. When you turn 21, you're crowned queen.
There should have been more booze around then for that celebration.
it's still a Disney movie. They have to keep it somewhat family friendly.
Elsa's story is a metaphor for being a gay youth, and in that movie, chocolate was a metaphor for alcohol.
Yes! I want to get chocolate wasted!
Now that I've gotten through my heavy drinking days, I actually want to get chocolate wasted.
I get chocolate wasted, or I try to get chocolate wasted whenever I can.
All right, very good. So do I don't think we came to a consensus on anything, but I feel like these are good discussions.
I think so too.
Yeah. So look, we will table this for now. We will come back to new questions in the moral obligations realm soon, because I think this was fun. I think this is a fun way to talk about Disney.
I think so too. I really liked it. It took me a while to come up with questions, but, you know, I'm not a big moral thinker, I guess.
We'll get you there, damn it.
Hey guys, this is Corinne Chandler from Mousellaneous Discussions, the Disney television and movie talk show here on the White Dragon Podcast Network, reminding you that every Monday is Mousellaneous Monday on WDPN. Kate Smith, Kevin Kessler, and I pick a different Disney topic to discuss each week, ranging from top five lists to movie reviews to major announcements coming out of the Walt Disney Company. Then we close the show out with Kate's Disney Recipe of the Week, where she'll teach you how to make a variety of dishes only found in Walt Disney World, and I pose a trivia question to you all, meant to test your knowledge of all things Disney. So please tune in every Monday morning on iTunes, Stitcher, and WhiteDragonPodcastNetwork.com for a new and magical episode.
Nobody cares, Corinne.
Shut up, Kevin. I'm plugging your network.
Oh. Okay, keep going. I like your announcer voice.
Thank you. Miscellaneous Discussions on WDPN. Come join us and let's get magical.
Hello, I'm Storybook Julius, the White Dragon Podcast Network's resident Canadian and the host of Storybook Radio, a Walt Disney World and Universal Studios podcast appearing every Wednesday here on WDPN. Walt Disney was a storyteller, and well, so am I. Now, I'm not saying that I'm as cool as Walt Disney or anything, but I'm saying that if you're looking for a unique take on the Walt Disney World and Universal Studios theme parks, with immersive looks at their stories, backstories, and histories, you've come to the right place. Head on over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Podomatic to subscribe to and download the Storybook Radio podcast each and every Wednesday. You can also check out www.storybookradio.com for more details and more content.
The Extra Magic Hour's just about over. But first, it's time for the glorious 3-hour finale.
This has been a very long episode, so we'll just make this quick. Goodbye, Kat.
Bye!